What in God's name do you need to solve it for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham. Mark Latham.
And Mark Latham joins me for the first time this year. Hello, Mark. Welcome back.
Thanks very much, Brent. Always good to be talking to you, and all the best to you and your listeners for 2024.
Let's get stuck into it. Let's talk about Mr. Albanese and, well, they're saying broken tax promises. I mean, he told us he was not going to change the Stage 3 tax cuts. The language changed in the last couple of weeks. And all of a sudden we find out that, well, there was $500,000 spent to bring everyone back a couple of weeks early. They were going to have a kumbaya meeting around the table to sort out cost of living problems for all Australians. That never happened because the Stage 3 tax cuts is his solution, Mark.
Yeah, it was a fait accompli. And they started work on this in the cabinet there late last year. So for some time, Albanese and Jim Chalmers have been preparing the ground for breaking the promise. And, you know, there are some promises in politics. They might be thought of as minor things where a politician said it once and then down the track they changed their mind. But this Stage 3 tax cut was the biggest economic issue going into the last election. And time after time, Albanese and Chalmers put their hand on the Bible, their hand on the heart, and said there's no way in the world Labor would change it. And they'd said that consistently for 18 months in government. So it's pretty rare that you find hundreds of occasions in which a political party has made a pledge and then just ripped it up like it didn't matter. And there's some commentators out there, I've been surprised by some of the commentary, sort of saying, oh, broken promises don't matter these days. I think they matter for politicians more than ever because the public are desperately hungry for someone who tells the truth. Someone who's honest, who has integrity, who can be trusted by their word. And when the Prime Minister of the country, time after time, effectively lies about his intentions, well, you can't trust him on anything else. And you've only got to go back to the Gillard government and the carbon tax broken promise to see how it wrecked, totally wrecked. There was a burning hatred of Julia Gillard by the end of it. It totally destroyed that government. And I think Albanese, you only had to see or listen to those boos at the tennis the other night to realise he's completely shredded his reputation. I mean, he had a very bad 2023 with The Voice, which was a complete waste of time, money and effort. And to start the new year with this brazen broken promise, I think is really bad news for the Labor government.
Mark, what do you say, though, when the majority of middle Australia with these tax three cuts are going to benefit? Some, only minutely, but there will be a benefit. Do you think that will offset the lie?
Well, let's understand the full scheme of what's going on here. They're called Stage 3 tax cuts because Stage 1 and 2 were benefits for low to middle income earners. So they're in the bank. And the big thing about the Stage 3 cuts was to get rid of the 37.5 marginal tax rate. You see, the great friend of bracket creep in the tax system is when you have extra marginal tax rates. And what Morrison and Frydenberg with the Stage 3 cuts were planning to do was to ensure that anyone earning between $40,000 and $200,000 in Australia wouldn't pay any more than 30 cents in the dollar marginal tax rate. A huge economic incentive to work for young people to stay in Australia instead of thinking, oh, I'll go to some low tax regime because it's too punitive here if I work hard and I succeed and accumulate some wealth. So it was a massive reform that between $40,000 and $200,000, you weren't going to pay more than 30 cents in the dollar. But to restore and keep the 37.5 tax rate means that people go into that as they earn more money. I think it's around $130,000. You go into that higher tax bracket, and that's the bracket creep where over a decade, people will be paying more money to the federal government under the Albanese reforms than if they'd stuck with the Frydenberg and Morrison plan. So it's a bit of a pea and thimble trick, Brent, to say, oh, people will be better off. They might have been better off if Albanese hadn't played the bracket creep card, kept the extra marginal tax rate, and meant that if you work hard, you earn some extra dollars, $130,000, it's not exactly being rich, particularly in New South Wales. and places like Melbourne, and you go into that higher tax bracket, and the tax man's got his hand in your pocket. So people won't be better off over a decade. The broken promise condemns Albanese, and we would have been much better in terms of incentive to work, economic growth, keeping our young people here if we'd stuck with the original plan.
We are one of the highest taxed countries in the world. Do you think our tax system needs a complete overhaul?
Well, we are highly taxed, and the burden falls on income tax. We're only behind Denmark in the advanced economies for reliance on income tax as a proportion of overall government revenue. So income tax in Australia is huge. To bring it down, and this was the point of the stage three cuts and have that incentive to work harder, was a great economic reform. I always said, why doesn't Morrison do this straight away? Why did he spend all that money on COVID? Why didn't he actually put the money in people's pockets prior to the last federal election, and he might have had a better chance of staying as Prime Minister? So, yeah, we do need tax reform. We had it, but Albanese broke the promise, and now we're going backwards.
Do you think, and there's been lots of talk on all talkback radio stations in recent times, do you think there is a possibility that this is a one-term government because of what the Prime Minister has done?
Well, absolutely. I didn't think that 12 months ago, but the disaster of The Voice, backed up by this broken promise and the economic wreckage that we're seeing from it, I think will be very damaging to Albanese. And I never thought there was a logical replacement in the Labor Party. I think we're looking at that scenario where they might do to him what they did to Rudd, what the Liberals did to Abbott, and he might end up being a less than one-term Prime Minister.
Right.
Because the Labor Party, I think they're going to be shocked by what the opinion polls show. People have had a gutful of these broken promises. They've seen it year after year, decade after decade, and they just want someone who has the simple integrity of saying, here are my election promises, and over a three-year term of Parliament, you actually stick to them. It's not hard to do. It can be done. And Albanese has shredded his reputation.
Look, we've talked about the lies that politicians tell here in the last couple of weeks, and most Australians, certainly the ones that listen to this network, most Australians don't trust politicians anyway. They think most politicians lie anyway.
But that's not a good thing, is it? That's,
No, not at all.
It's dreadful for our democracy, and for people to... Look, you can't blame people for forming that attitude. They're looking at the evidence. This started effectively with the Fraser government that broke a lot of promises. John Howard had core and non-core promises. Gillard had the carbon tax. Now Albanese's done this on income tax. So you can't blame people. These are absolute howlers of broken promises. And that's why I think the public write off politicians who do it. They've seen it too many times, and they don't want the equivalent of a used car salesman as their Prime Minister of the country.
Yesterday's report from the Australian Bureau of Statistics showed inflation at 4.1% through the 12 months to December. Now, that's confirmed other signals that the economy and price pressures are slowing faster than expected, and there are now talks by economists. There possibly could be, as a result of this, if we maintain this level of inflation, or lack of it, there could be, they're talking about two interest rate cuts in the next 12 months.
Well, the economy has been flattened in some respects. The lower inflation numbers are welcome, but they come off the back of those dreadful retail sales figures in December, where effectively the retailers, Brent, and all the shops had the worst Christmas that they could remember in terms of the public getting out there and spending. Everything was down except spending on food. So, you know, we've talked about this many, many times. The Reserve Bank put up the interest rates too late and too many times, and they've flattened spending, and that's why inflation's coming down. I think it would have come down anyway, because with the end of COVID and the supply chain problems starting to ease, the labour shortages easing a little bit, inflation was going to ease down anyway. So the Reserve Bank was too late. They were asleep at the wheel, and then interest rate rises went up too many times. So they do need to come down. They do need to come down once inflation's under control. So that looks like the scenario, but they should never have gone up the way they did.
I don't know. It's a double-edged sword, isn't it? I mean, there are self-funded retirees sitting back listening to us this afternoon thinking, finally we started to see some decent interest rates on a return of a savings account or term deposits for self-funded retirees, and now they're talking about cutting interest rates again. you win some, you lose some, Mark.
Well, I suppose so, but those self-funded retirees are also consumers, and nobody has enjoyed the experience in the supermarket or any other shop the last 2 years, have they, to see the way the prices have gone up. So the economy is always much better off if inflation is stable and low in that Reserve Bank range of 2 to 3%, so a little bit of growth there, but not a lot, and we've got economic growth and low employment. So, you know, the fundamentals are coming back into order for inflation. Unemployment remains low, but economic growth, that's the worry. The economy is a lot flatter now than it needed to be, and everyone will suffer from that.
As of today, you will pay more for a beer at a pub, and brewers and distillers are calling on the government, the Albanese government, to freeze taxes on alcohol, as a February hike will possibly push the cost of a pint of beer over $15. Do you think that the Albanese government will listen to brewers and distillers about this?
No, I don't think they will. I don't think that's the highest priority in cost of living. You know, I enjoy a cold beer in the summer as much as anyone, but you've got to look at the supermarket prices, you've got to look at the interest rates, the mortgages, the housing affordability crisis, the energy bills, electricity. Where's the $275 electricity bill cut that Albanese promised? That's where the action is on cost of living, much more than the price of having a couple of beers. So, no, I don't think anyone could regard that as a priority.
Okay, let me ask you about relief on fuel excise. That will benefit every Australian that drives a motor vehicle. Why don't governments, or why don't the Labor Party, seriously look at that again?
Yeah, I think they should. A freeze on excise would be welcome. It has only a marginal impact, but it's something that everyone, like beer consumption, it's something that everyone's doing in filling up their car, and it's a major weekly expense. So if you can do something on that front, yeah, I think that makes a lot better sense. But the big one, of course, and with the voice debate and now the broken promise from Albanese, he's getting off the hook a bit, is the broken promise on electricity prices, power bills. That's the outrageous one. You know, went to an election saying $275 reduction. It's gone the other way, and it's been very, very harmful to people. And the over-reliance on renewables, you know, Australia used to have the cheapest and most reliable power in the world. They flicked the switch to renewables, and now we've got some of the most expensive power in the world, which is dreadful for consumers, but it's also in driving investment offshore.
But no one in the government side of things is listening to people like you and I talking about this all the time, to Australians talking about this, how desperate they are to have cheaper energy. The government's not listening. Bowen's out there, you know, just sailing ahead all as normal.
Well, it's a modern Australian tragedy. I was talking to a colleague about this the other day, that there aren't many nations in history that have said, look, we've got a natural endowment where we've called ourselves the lucky country, we're rich in resources, but we're not going to use them. I mean, this is the modern Australian tragedy of having resources from uranium to coal to gas that we just don't use, all in the banner, the false expectation that we can play a role in saving the planet from climate change. So it's a disaster. Peter Dutton talks about nuclear power, which is welcome, but that's very much late in the scene compared to what the Howard, Abbott, Turnbull and Morrison governments could have actually done. So I think historians will look back on this period in Australian history and think, what sort of crazy nation not only failed to use its natural advantages and resources, but effectively was exporting jobs to China, which is happy to use our resources and develop their country and send all that pollution and climate change contribution into the sky, while Australia made a sacrifice that we never needed to make.
And we're talking to Mark Latham this afternoon. Mark, the new school year has started. I think it's today that all schools and teachers are back, but there is an ongoing teacher shortage again this year.
Yeah, it is, and reports that they're having to bring retired teachers back into the service. That's not a good thing. I mean, if people have retired and moved on, they're probably out of touch with the latest developments with the curriculum, and you know, they might have been sliding into retirement anyway and reluctant to come back. So it's not a good thing that we have these teacher shortages. But, Brent, you know, it's a product of a problem over many decades where both sides of politics, Labor and Liberal, made a deal with the Teachers' Federation, and instead of paying teachers the proper amount and treating them like a proper profession with professional standards. They traded all that away and said have very, very soft working conditions. And I always say to people, if you ever have a look at the Industrial Award for Teachers in New South Wales, which is about an inch thick, you'll be shocked by some of the conditions there where effectively, you know, it's like a sheltered workshop. You just couldn't believe the soft conditions that have been instituted over the years. So we haven't got a teaching profession that's well regarded or well remunerated. And as a result, we haven't got the best and brightest of our school leavers coming into teaching. And that's something that the Minns government has got to turn around urgently to make sure that every single student in the state has got a well-trained, evidence-based teacher in front of them in the classroom doing the job and getting high-level results.
I got an email from somebody yesterday saying that their child has gone back to school this week and they are, believe it or not, in the school 19 teachers short.
Yeah, well, this is what happened over the last couple of years under the Berejiklian and Perrottet governments, and there's horror stories of kids that just sit in the classroom instead of being in school, or they just send them up the library to read a book, or they collapse the classes together. There's one teacher for the equivalent of three classes. So these are horror stories right around the state. The Minns government and Prue Carr, the education minister, said they had a solution, but we're yet to see it.
Yes, don't hold your breath.
No, well, we need long-term change and a whole revolution to improve the professionalism and the reputation of teachers. So, but the problem is the Labor Party's in the pocket of the Teachers' Federation, and for 12 years in government, the Coalition was scared to make any reforms because essentially they were petrified of the Teachers' Federation going on strike. So, you know, these education ministers, they might as well hand the job over to whoever runs the Federation.
On Monday night, Lauren O'Neill, sadly she was bitten by a shark in the Elizabeth Bay area, and I suppose, look, as a result of this, the stories about shark nets, do we, don't we, and local councils almost refusing to make safe areas, netted safe areas, for people in Sydney to swim, Mark, in the ocean.
Yeah, that's the trend. You know, 30 years ago, the assumption was, well, we need shark nets to keep humans safe from being bitten and eaten by sharks, but the new assumption is that these nettings are bad for the marine environment. It is a complex debate. Like part of me says, well, you go into the water, you're entering the shark's habitat, you've got to accept that there's some risk. But more sensibly, wouldn't you reach the conclusion that humans have got the capacity to master nature, to do things to protect ourselves against the dangers of nature? And the shark netting would be a logical part of that. But I think it also gives people peace of mind. Like, I live in Western Sydney, so I'm not a great beach goer. But I've got to say that when I'm swimming, I always take a bit more comfort to know there's netting there than if there's not. So, you know, I'm pro the shark nets, basically, because I think we've got to protect people first and worry about animals and fish second.
Or find yourself a good rock pool where the sharks can't get in.
Okay. Well, maybe the Camden lap pool is the safest of the lot.
Yeah, I would agree there. In Newcastle, there's a couple of terrific rock pools around, or you've got, you know, some wonderful pools right on the coast. But I remember down on the south coast in Wollongong, there was there's two rock pools, and they are just the best place because they're tidal, and they are just the best place to have a swim. It's safe, and the water's always fresh because of there being tidal pools.
Well, they sound fantastic because the alternative, I've got to say, the news of a shark attack, a very serious shark attack in Sydney Harbour, is petrifying for a lot of people because you just don't expect it, and it's got to be one of the worst things that could happen to you. You know, we sort of love our beaches and take them for granted to some extent that it's a great experience, but being attacked by a shark, that movie Jaws has got a lot to answer for.
It does, doesn't it? The music, everything. It's always great to catch up with you, Mark. Thank you for joining us this year, first time round. We'll talk to you again, same time, same place, next Thursday.
Yeah, look forward to it. Thanks, Brent.
Okay, Mark. See you later, mate. Bye-bye.